Concluding remarks. Please, you have a floor.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, Excellencies. I would like to thank you for your engagement in this interactive dialogue and for your comments and important reflections. I greatly appreciated the many expressions of support for the work of my office and for my staff. I also thank you for the kind words and wishes addressed to me. Some of you referred to the importance of my office presence on the ground, including to provide technical assistance to member states, civil society, and other stakeholders for the promotion and protection of human rights. I'm convinced that this work is of critical importance, and I sincerely hope in the near future OITHR will be able to strengthen its footprint in the field, including at the regional level. I concur with those of you who underline that adequate financial resources, including from the regular budget, are critical for the effectiveness and sustainability of my office's work. I call on the support of all member states in this regard. I would like to thank those of you who expressed support for the UN Human Rights Mechanism. Your interest for the backbones of the international human rights system is welcome. I note in particular the references to the UPR, treaty bodies, and special procedures, and reiterate the readiness of my office and the rest of the UN system to provide support to states at their request for any follow-up action meant to strengthen national human rights protection systems. I take this opportunity to stress the good collaboration between my office and UNDP, in particular in the collection of UPR good practices. We're also working to ensure that the UN, following the Secretary General's call to action, our common agenda, makes fuller use of human rights mechanisms to solve economic, political, and social challenges, and better links them to the other processes to maximize impact. I also call on state to help us realizing the call in the common agenda to put human rights mechanisms on a more sustainable financial footing. I welcome the growing recognition of the importance of establishing strong national mechanisms for reporting, implementation, and follow-up. My office remains available to support you in your engagement with the various mechanisms. We're also happy to inform you that the redesigned and more user-friendly version of the National Recommendations Tracking Database will be rolled out and offered to states later this summer. I would also like to join the President of this Council in condemning, in the strongest terms, any personal attacks against special procedures mandate holders. My office and I will continue to defend the integrity of mandate holders and take the necessary measures should such attacks occur. Excellencies, let me try to address some of the questions addressed to me. There were several requests for more information with regard to my recent visit to China. As I stated, the visit was not an investigative mission, but a visit to engage with the government of China to promote the respect and protection of human rights and to explore ways for my office to assist the government to fulfill its obligation under international human rights law. The government of China accepted the visit of an advanced team from my office to allow for the preparation of my visit. The government also facilitated meetings with all institutions I had asked to meet, such as senior members of key ministries, the judiciary, business, academia, and other relevant stakeholders. The government also respected my wish to hold meetings with civil society organizations. These were organized by my office without presence of public officials. In the context of the visit, a number of specific situations of concerns were also raised. As it would be true of any high-level visit, which by definition is not an investigation mission, there were limitations, especially given the prevailing COVID restrictions. I was accompanied by government officials throughout the visit to Xinjiang. I visited Kashgar prison plus a former so-called BETC where I spoke to the authorities. I was not able to speak to any Uyghurs currently detained or their families during the visit. However, in anticipation of this, I did meet with some former detainees who are now outside the country. And with families who have lost contact with loved ones ahead of my visit. I also met with civil society organizations working on human rights issues in China, including Xinjiang, Tibet, and Hong Kong regions. My visit provided an important opportunity to raise concerns directly with senior leaders and officials. It allowed me and my team to obtain certain impressions of the situation and provided ample space to ask questions and discuss issues. And as I mentioned already in my statement on Monday, my office has been collecting information remotely for some time and will now update assessment on the situation of human rights in Xinjiang, and it will be shared with the government for factual comments before publication. There was a question on how the international community can build on existing mechanisms to stop conflict-related sexual violence. Prompt and effective implementation of the recommendation of existing mechanisms, including the investigative body established by the Human Rights Council, is critical to ensure accountability and promote a better understanding of effective measures to stop conflict-related sexual violence. We also need to reinforce and scale up support to the work of existing mechanisms and help operationalize a victim-centered approach. In particular, it is critical to ensure holistic and gender-sensitive assessments of evolving needs and expectations of survivors taking part in accountability processes and to support them. This includes strengthened legal representation and professional legal advice for survivors, support for individual and collective protection measures, as well as provision of psychosocial support and medical services. Support for peer groups and survivors' networks have also proven invaluable for survivors' empowerment, including through language assistance, support for participation in decision-making processes, training, and enhanced access to funding opportunities. Support to national justice processes is also critical, including for victim-centered proceedings that ensure protection of survivors' identity and other protection measures such as shelters, temporary relocations, and psychosocial support throughout court proceedings. Support to initiatives to address capacity gaps in public servants and law enforcement officers, investigators, prosecutors, and judges, and to promote behavioral changes, including by combating harmful gender stereotypes and stigma, are also needed. UN inquiries and investigation also continue to need additional support, including for deployments of specialized experts, training and deployment of interpreters, translators, media communication, outreach, and dissemination. And finally, there is a need to support the development and use of technology in investigations. OHCHR has been looking into allegations of children forcibly deported from Ukraine to the Russian Federation, including children who were reportedly taken from orphanage and subsequently offered for adoption in Russia. OHCHR cannot yet confirm this allegation or the number of children who could be in such a situation. We are concerned about the alleged plans of the Russian authorities to allow the movement of children from Ukraine to families in the Russian Federation, which do not appear to include steps for family reunification or respect the best interest of the child. In exercise of my office's mandate, we will continue to closely follow the issue. Many of you mentioned situations of concern, from Ukraine to Afghanistan to many others. We will have opportunity to discuss some of this situation in the coming days. Excellencies, as many of you underlined in your statements, we are living at a time of escalating human rights crisis around the world. Conflict, climate change, and the ongoing COVID pandemic, along with the many other threats waiting in the wings, biodiversity loss, financial stability, water, energy and food insecurity, this digital disruption and manipulation, and many more. In this context, I echo Secretary General's statement. I will quote him, "Multilateralism is under fire precisely when we need it most," end of quote. Like him, in the face of massive existential threats to people and planet, I appeal for a renewed commitment to a rule-based order. As some of you stress, we need a new multilateral order based on constructive dialogue, international solidarity, mutual respect, and renewed commitment to human rights. I believe this is the only way forward. Alternative, we can retreat into a world sharply divided and ultimately in conflict and deprivation. It's only by placing all human rights, including the right to a healthy environment, at the heart of our intentions and our actions can for a viable future to be secure. I thank you.